How about Mike in San Diego? Here we go. He wants to talk about what I just talked about. Maybe he's got a different perspective on it. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling. What's up?
Hi. Yeah, I do have a bit of a different perspective from living in San Diego, because I am a Giants fan down here, but obviously most of my friends are Padres fans, and pretty much every single one of them, to a man, was absolutely thrilled when the Giants hired Melvin, because we immediately knew that we weren't a threat, because he got ran out of here with the, you're right, the front office, we'll call it shenanigans. That was 100% a thing. But the mismanagement of the bullpen consistently is what got him out. And we're kind of seeing it here too. I looked it up earlier today. Our bullpen, the Giants bullpen, is a full third of a point better in ERA than every other bullpen. Insane how they're so good, yet they're only 500. Yet they're middle of the pack in blown saves. That's 100% decision making right there. And I would agree with you to the, I would agree with you to the sense of, like, yeah, it's the players on the uniform, like 90%. But it's also the decisions a manager makes and the staff they hire. I don't think it's a coincidence that, like, Adames comes here. He's having the worst hitting season of his career. It is too early on Devers, but it is definitely a bit concerning to see this slump immediately when he gets here.
Why do you? Yeah, Mike, can I ask you, why do you think if there are some blown saves, why is that a managerial decision-making problem rather than, you know, say, for example, Camilo Duvall and Ryan Walker controlling the strike zone?
It's like I said, it's a bit of both. Like, it's 100% a lot on the player throwing the pitches, obviously. But take the one, I think it was a couple games ago, where Ryan in Chicago, where Ryan Walker blew the save. Because it's still a blown save, even if it's not just the ninth inning. If you're up, I think, after the seventh, it counts the blown save if you lose the lead. Second, third, two men out. You have Randy Rodriguez, your best pitcher available. And then you go to Ryan Walker, who's been struggling. It was a no-brainer decision. Randy hadn't pitched in a couple in a game, and he was ready to go. It's just stuff like that that got him ran out of town here, and pretty much every Padres fan is thrilled that he's gone. But, yeah, that's what I was talking about, an example of that. But you're also right that at the end of the day, it is the players who have the uniform on that who should have the lion's share of the blame.
Yeah, Mike, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, the Randy Rodriguez one, he had not pitched on Saturday. And so, you know, who knows what analytics they had with regard to the hitter coming up and what Walker or Rodriguez or whatever. Like, I don't know that. So that's a fair thing to throw in there. But again, rather than you know, talk about that, when he mentions blown saves as a managerial decision-making issue, it's funny because I actually feel like that's usually kind of the no-brainer. That's the one where you don't need to think. It's the ninth inning. We're up by two runs.
Yep.
Our closer's coming in. That's the way that works. There's not much of a decision there. And I know he's talking about some other innings and whatnot. And so, sure, you can absolutely get into that. But if Ryan Walker doesn't even know where his foot's supposed to land,
right?
I don't know, man. I'm not putting that on Bomel. The pitcher's got to pitch. Ryan Walker is one of your late inning leverage pitchers. He was phenomenal last year. He hasn't figured it out this year, but this comes down to the options that a manager has on a night-in and night-out basis.
And you, pretty much, if you have a good bullpen, and they do, you have roles that are pre-established, and you've got Miller, who's going to be your lefty when you've got a spot where you're going to face multiple lefties in there. Frisbee guy Tyler Rogers is going to come in the seventh or the eighth, and you've got Rodriguez and Duvall, and you got Walker, and you've done pretty well as a pen. For me, the issues overall for this season have not been bullpen related. They haven't been starting pitching related. It's been the little things. And this is where maybe you can be critical of Bob Melvin, but, you know, base running and execution with runners in scoring position, execution with runners on third or less than two outs, you know, run producing spots where you don't necessarily need a hit to score a run. Again, though, for me, it comes down to the players. Is it Bob Melvin's fault that Brett Wisely is 20 feet off
third base on
a strike him out, throw him out? Is he not coaching up a young player to say, hey, just a reminder, you may not want to drift too far away from third when we're down 1-0. So the mistakes that they've been making of late, for me, don't fall at the foot of the manager.
100%. 100%.
Like, these are professional grown men,
and,
you know?
And, like, this is one thing, and again, so not to make it a catch-all. There are absolutely maneuvers in the bullpen that Bomel has made this year that I've questioned. You always wonder about, like, why don't we go with our best guy, like, all the time? And sometimes I think you're right to criticize. Other times there's things going on with players down in the bullpen or matchups and whatnot that we don't know about. But this is whenever I hear somebody get frustrated with a manager, it is often about this, the way they handle a bullpen. And it's fascinating to me. You can argue about overuse, but largely what I see is when a fan is mad at usage in the bullpen, it is an argument that comes after that reliever has given up runs. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, these are my relievers, as you just pointed out. They have their role. So I really, in any given situation, I'm probably going with either one or the other guy. I make that choice. If that pitcher comes in and executes well, I'm a genius. If he doesn't, I'm an idiot. And so that's why I lean in the other direction. Like, sure, you can second-guess decisions, but we know damn well who these relievers are. They've been very good this year. When they give up runs or when they trip on themselves on the mound, that's not Bob Melvin's fault. That's their fault. That's their fault. And the Rodriguez one is an interesting point. No question. So they share in it, but for me, it's way less than 50%.
Yes, because you have pitchers that you are putting in roles, and for the most part, these pitchers are all throwing in the role that you have prescribed for them to be. And the one is Doval. When he comes in a non-save situation, he tends to not do very well, and that's something that, you know, they have to adjust to with Camilo and with their own approach, but of late, they haven't even had that many of those situations. So, yeah, it's kind of like the Steve Kerr argument where people talk about his rotations. And how is he supposed to know before a game who is going to play well and who's not going to play well? And just hearing you lay that out had me thinking about that age-old debate that we have about Steve Kerr and his rotations. It's the same thing with Bob Melvin. You've got a bullpen, and he doesn't know if Ryan Walker is going to have a night where he doesn't know where to put his foot in a high-leverage situation. And he had two balks over the last few games, and he doesn't know that going in. So you go with what you think is the best, and you live with the result.
Yeah, and look, and you're open to being second-guessed in that role, no question about it. But I think if you watch Giants baseball a lot this year, I'm not over yet or I should say my shine hasn't kind of gone away yet with regard to the different way that this team plays baseball as opposed to what was going on with the previous regime. I still think that this is just much more, how do I say it? Baseball. This is much more baseball. I recognize this a lot more. There are a few things that I don't love. I don't love some of the bunting. I don't love sending runners who are definitely going to get thrown out because you have no confidence in whatever's next. There are little things that I don't like, but if I'm going to really assess Giants baseball and go over problems right now, I'm not getting to Bob Melvin until we're way, way, way down the list.
That's fair. And, you know, of late, the problem, one of them, has been the injury bug that suddenly has come up and bit you to the point where Wilmer Flores will play third base. Just looking at last year for Wilmer, he played third base twice in the entire year, and you know, the big talk last year was all that time in the field was wearing Wilmer down. And so this year they haven't played him in the field very much. He's played more first of late because he's had to. And now you got to put him over at third because you lost Chapman and Schmidt and Koss, three guys ahead of him on the depth chart. And, you know, maybe we see Rafi Devers tomorrow or Thursday over at third base. But of late, the biggest issue outside of their finding new ways to lose, suddenly now they're kind of bit by the injury bug.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, Grandy, what's up?
Bob Melvin speaking pregame. This comes courtesy of our Giants insider, Alex Pavlovich. He says that Melvin said, in addition to groin tightness, Devers has been dealing with some back tightness, and that he's also up for playing third base when healthy, but for right now, he's not even cleared for first. So it'll be Flores and Wisely until Chapman returns.
Flores and Wisely. Not Fitzgerald.
You said groin and back is what he's working with?
Yes, he's dealing with some back tightness in addition to the groin tightness.
What's wrong?
You got back tightness. You got a groin.
Dog
and
days
you got a
summer.
Back.
Yeah.
We're not even to the dog days yet.
Sure we are.
August is the dog days.
Well, days are whenever you start dogging it.
Well,
I mean, some players are going to get there sooner than others.
I get it, but, you know, you're not necessarily that old of a team. And
no, but look.
But you got a groin.
If it hurts, it hurts.
And maybe you're overcompensating with your groin, mm-hmm. and that's why your back hurts. And, you know, Schmidt had that little light blue bandage on his hand, and Chappie's been gone for almost a month. And, you know, you go on and on and on. It's like, okay, who are the healthy bodies? Jung-Hoo Lee can no longer hit. Patrick Bailey actually has kind of come alive a little bit with the stick.
I love it. Come alive.
Well, he's...
Is he up to 200 yet?
No, but he's getting closer. He's actually had some run-scoring hits.
Yes.
And
yes, he has.
You know, beyond that, like, Yaz has been pretty solid, but up and down your lineup, you are missing your big bats doing big things. And I'm sorry, but at what point do we start to look at Willie Adames and start scratching our collective head?
Oh, we're already there.
Okay.
We're totally already there.
My own new team and slow start and great clubhouse guy. I mean,
there's two different things you can do. Like, you can be frustrated and as you put it, look at a guy and start to question things. Also, without being like, I'm leaving the party. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think any of these players you just brought up, they don't need to be. This is not an all or nothing proposition. A, it's baseball. There's going to be ebbs and flows. But there's no escaping that this is a very disappointing overall start for Willie Adames. It's been disappointing. That does not mean I'm jumping Adames' ship. You get 6.5 more years here, and I remain optimistic that that's going to end up being a good thing for the Giants. And I would also say there are things that Adames has brought to the table this year for the Giants that you don't see in the box scores. Absolutely. So
yeah, there's a
middle ground.
Yeah.
It's been disappointing. So you can look at it for sure.
And the whole like great clubhouse guy and what doesn't show up in the box score, that narrative for me gets a little bit more tired each time he goes out and he goes 0-for-4 or 1-for-5.
I hear you. At the same time,
I'm not ready to jump ship either.
Yeah, it's not just clubhouse though. Even though like his defense over at shortstop hasn't been great. But
pretty good last night. He made a nifty little play.
Yeah, like there's certain things sometimes, like Brandon Crawford was this for years. Brandon was a phenomenal glove in the field. And often, not always, often it was like, not great at the plate. But what did Brandon do? He gave you continuity. Like he held the damn position down and he played every day.
Yeah.
Let's give that to Willie. You have not had to wonder, like, wow, what were we doing at shortstop? You're going to ride this train. It's a disappointing ride so far. I hope it gets better. I'm rooting for him. Nobody seems like a better dude. And he's got a long resume in this league, which also, to me, is what matters more than anything else. That's why right now, if I'm fearful of something that's going on with the Giants' offense, it's Jung-Hoo Lee. It's not Adames and it's not Devers. Because those guys have resumes. I know what they can do in the bigs. Repeatedly. They've done it for years. Jung-Hoo Lee is just starting to come close to finishing one full season as a Major League Baseball player.
Right, he's got 453 career at-bats.
And I'm worried that somebody got a book on him.
Book, book, book.
That's what it looks like to me. You know? And so I hope he pops out of it. And I'm still very bullish. I think his approach at the plate and his skill set and what we saw early in the year and the excitement at the ballpark and the hats and the nicknames and the weekend
that's all great.
Giveaways
that's
and all,
all
that,
great.
That's all good. This is a moment in time that has now been uncomfortably prolonged.
Can call it 2 months.
Yeah. I'm not going to jump ship there either, but if there's an offensive player that right now is the most concerning, that's your guy. For me, more so than Adames or Devers.
I buy it because, you know, they do have track records, but you also are relying on Adames and Devers to do more than you are Jung-Hoo Lee. Like, you're not looking for him to be a big-time run producer. It would be great if he was, but...
Table setter, though.
You can't set the table, though, when you're hitting 143 in June.
No, of course not. That's the concern.
And he's drawn 14 walks in June, not terrible, but his OPS is 551 for the month. He's been bad.
Yeah,
so now he actually gets he's a DNP today, healthy scratch, and a day off, and hopefully he can collect his thoughts and be ready for tomorrow and Thursday. But you're not wrong in talking about the disappointment level, and especially now that you don't have Chapman and Adames has been below average and Devers hasn't really had that hot streak yet. You would love to have your center fielder who plays every day be like he was in April when he had an OPS of 901.
Yeah, I tell you what, here's what's really tough, and this is why I'm not going to be putting it on a manager or a bullpen or any of that stuff. If you just go through the Giants' offense as a whole, give me the name of any player who has not been at least mildly disappointing this year.
Probably Elliot Ramos.
Yep. And
I would say Wilmer Flores too.
Well, that was true, and now we're getting the other side of it. But sure, okay, I'll buy that. And if you remove injury, I would say Matt Chapman. Matt Chapman has not been disappointing this year.
No, he's been good.
Yeah, that's kind of the end of the list.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Wade was so disappointing that he's gone. Devers, this has not been a great start, even though that, I think, is explainable. Patrick Bailey, disappointing.
Up to 196.
Great. You wanted Tyler Fitzgerald to grab second base. He hasn't.
Starting tonight.
You know, Casey Schmidt. Some recent signs, okay, let's see.
Small sample, but he actually, if you just look at his numbers, and it's, again, it's only 98 at-bats, but he's been good.
He's been good. But that's largely because of sort of like the last 35 of those 98 at-bats.
Yeah.
The first 60 or so looked a lot like the other guy who just swings at everything.
And the grand slam off the position player definitely pads the numbers a little bit.
Yaz was really good, then really bad, now settling into just sort of regular.
It's Yaz. Yeah.
But, like, I guess maybe if I asked it a different way, forget, like, is there anyone who hasn't been disappointing? Who would you look at on offense and been like, dude, good year?
It'd be Elliot Ramos.
Ramos.
Yeah, that's it.
One guy.
Right. And, you know, he's not the guy making nine figures. You have two of them, and so you get all excited about that. And this would be like the Warriors having Steph Curry average 19 a game on, you know, 34% from three, and Jimmy Butler's averaging 15.5 a game, and he's shooting 48% from the floor, and yet, you know, pods, Ramos is kind of like the pods of this team, and he'd be averaging 20. It's like, all right, yeah, if only these other two guys can get their game going, we might have something.
Then there's also this, by the way, those of you who maybe just getting out of work for the day or whatever, and you want to know, okay, day two free agency, what do we got? Well, not a lot. Not a lot. The Shams bombs have slowed down significantly. And I think that there's something important to say there. And I'll do that here in just a second. But first, to just kind of give a quick summary, and guys, jump in if I'm forgetting anything. Clearly, the headliner of the day is what was pulled off by the Milwaukee Bucks. They decided to waive Damian Lillard, spread out the remainder of what they owe him over 5 years. So almost basically deferring payments, turning it into a Bobby Bonilla light situation on Bobby Bonilla Day. That's fun. But then they take that newfound money and they went and grabbed Miles Turner away from the Indiana Pacers on a 4-year deal worth a little bit over $100 million. There have been some other deals that kind of, you know, made their way in. Duncan Robinson goes to the Detroit Pistons on a 3-year deal. You know, gosh, what else? Tim Hardaway, that was an interesting one. He ends up on a 1-year deal with the Denver Nuggets. I thought that was a pretty nice deal for him. But largely, it has been quiet, and it has been 100% quiet for the Golden State Warriors. And here's what I think that is, again, a big neon sign to say, which is that Jonathan Kuminga and his agent are not finding the money out on the market that they hope to find. And Dunleavy warned us about this, said restricted free agency can drag out sometimes, and this is dragging out. And so we knew that the Warriors couldn't do much this offseason, and they really couldn't do anything until they figured out Kuminga. And so here we are. I don't find any of this surprising, but I get that for a lot of Warrior fans, it's just not fun when you don't get to attend the party.
Right, and you want to at least be able to show up to the party, and right now you're stuck in traffic, and you know that you're not going to be in the VIP room where all the big-time free agents and the big money's going, and I don't know if you even mentioned the Shea Gilgeous-Alexander max that he got.
Yeah.
So, and that was pretty predictable, so he gets, what, 5 and 285, whatever the number is, and he deserves it, and yeah, Shea, get your money. But that is like the top level VIP. That's the champagne room. You can't even get to the VIP room. You can't even get to the party because right now your Uber driver, Jonathan Kuminga, has you stuck in traffic. And you're just waiting to get to the club so you can get in line and maybe get a piece of this party you're describing. And right now you can't even get there because you're waiting on Kuminga.
Can I get like... Go back to, by the way, the other one might be interesting to people in our audience. Dennis Schroeder did end up with the Sacramento Kings earlier today. Schroeder. 3 years, $45 million. Schroeder went out and got $15 million a year.
No doubt.
He played well for the Pistons after the trade last year.
Yep.
But that that deal for SGA that you mentioned, I feel like I saw this get listed. Richest, and yes, now confirmed. Shams said, richest annual salary for a player in league history. And he's making less than Steph. I was like, wait a minute, what do you mean richest annual salary in league history? 285 over 5 is 57 annual. Doesn't Steph make 59?
Yeah, and
I know this just is like a little weird little factoid, but I thought I'd ask.
Yeah. I wonder if that is it's a 4 year 285 is what I'm seeing.
It is?
That's what I'm seeing.
Oh, well, that explains it.
USA Today. Yeah, 4 year 285. The AAV, average annual value, puts it at 71.25.
71.25.
Cha-ching!
Damn. All that
or catch me out one time, major bag. I learned a major.
All that just to shoot free throws. What a wonderful deal. Woo!
That into win rings and trophies. So, I mean, if that bothers you, then yeah, it's a gross overpay.
It's a gross overpay.
I mean, that's a lot of money.
MVP of the league and the finals in the same year, and you thought that was worth something?
You're looking at, and I'm doing rough math here, but $900,000 per game. Whether or not you play... And you're not expected to play all 48.
I can't wait till somebody hits the 82 million mark so they can be like, do you remember, for those of you who have been around for a minute, you'll remember this, when the cast of Friends demanded, remember they held out? They held out like a Bosa.
I remember this.
And they were like, we're not showing up again until you give all of us equally $1 million an episode.
You thought it was 900K, but you're probably right.
I think
right.
It was a milli. Yep. They're like $1 million an episode. And back when this was being filmed, that was like, whoa, what? But they ran TV, dude. They ran that thing. That show was so damn popular. And quite frankly, that's peanuts when you look at what that franchise ended up making.
And you
they
know got what it is money. Now, right?
What's that?
It's a syndication sensation.
That's very, very
that
good.
That thing is on somewhere.
Constantly.
It's on somewhere at all times in probably 144 countries.
Round the clock. Those people will never need to work again, and many of them haven't. But anyway, they wanted $1 million episode, and they got it. And they got it. They held out, and they got it. I can't wait till we get that contract. This can be how much you make per game, Millie?
A lot.
Millie. How much money you got? A lot.
Even like Dennis Schroeder, who is he's a good NBA player. You know, he's a guy that you can play, and many teams have. I wonder if you know how many teams, if you count Sacramento, assuming that he does actually play for Sacramento.
Schroeder?
How many different teams will he have played on in his career?
Oh, gosh. Do you want me to name them?
Just name the number first. I'll give you plus or minus one team. Scut-da-da-da.
How many teams has Dennis Schroeder played for in the NBA if we count the Kings?
Yep.
I would guess that it's probably... let's go seven.
I'm sorry, Mark.
That's too bad.
That's really too bad. Thank you for playing, and you'll get a copy of our home game.
I was considering going eight. Would that have worked?
Grandy?
Ah, damn.
You want to try one more time?
47.
The answer is 10.
Damn.
10.
10 teams?
Atlanta, OKC, the Lakers. Boston, Houston, the Lakers. The Lakers.
Oh, wait, one.
We didn't count it twice.
Oh, okay.
Didn't count it twice.
Say, you can't do that.
Then Toronto, cup of coffee with Brooklyn.
Sure.
And then Golden State for 24 games.
Also a cup of coffee. Yeah, I don't even think you finished it.
That was an espresso.
Yeah, exactly.
And then another cup with Detroit, 28 games. The man's had a lot of coffee.
That's a lot of coffee.
Yep. I believe I know that the record holder is Ish Smith, and I think that his number is 15 teams.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, so, Schroeder, I guess I should have known. It's four teams in less than a calendar year.
Correct.
If you're going to count the Kings. Because, right, Brooklyn, Warriors, Pistons, Kings, just since the start of last year.
Right, and you look at Basketball Reference, and it's rare that you see the 3TM stats, where here's his combined three teams. Brooklyn, Warriors, and Detroit all last year.
All last
23,
year.
24, and 28 games, respectively.
Man.
There you have it.
You guys were talking about Shea's new contract, the extension that he got, and you guys laid out the AAV, 71 and a quarter, million per year. Do you guys see the way it's backloaded?
No.
So he's making $63 million when the contract kicks in 2027-28. The last year of the contract, 2030-31.
Tell me he's got up over 82.
78.8 million.
Almost a million.
Almost
game.
79 million.
Huh.
2030 and 31.
Back that contract up.
Good Lord. Will you fact check my son on something? I took the big guy to Costco today, and he, like every other teen in America, the phone, the whole ride. But he's looking at stuff NBA related.
Dad, can I get 38 pounds of popcorn?
No, he wanted 27 buckets of ice cream. But actually, this is the first thing he says to me when he comes upstairs this morning. Well, there goes our chance at a championship. And I'm like, are you talking about the Giants losing streak? He's like, no. I go, what are you talking about? He's like, dude, we need a center. I'm like, oh, you're mad that Miles Turner is on the Bucks.
He also called you dude?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's a grown up now.
Yeah. Sure. I call my dad dude all the time. Yeah. Plus, dude is not like I'm addressing you. It's just a word you say before you start talking. Dude. It's also now bro. And bro can be whether you're a guy or a girl if you're a teen. I don't know if you know that.
And if he
everything said, is bro.
But if he says
bruh,
that becomes a little disrespectful.
Well, whatever.
Like, bruh, are we going to ever get there?
Yeah.
You
don't have teens right now. Like, it's unavoidable. Anyway.
Yeah, what are we fact-checking here?
Fact-check this, because we're halfway to Costco, and he pulls out the phone, and he starts talking about SGA's deal. And he goes, he gave me a number, and I don't remember what it was, but he goes, do you know how many free throws SGA shot in the playoffs? Just in the playoffs? It was more than Tyrese Halliburton shot all year. I was like, whoa, that one got me. And I believe him. Did SGA shoot like well over 200 free throws just in the playoffs? And he says it was more than Halliburton shot during the regular season. I find that offensive if true.
Well, he shot this year in the playoffs.
Just in the playoffs.
217.
That sounds about what he said. How many did Halliburton
shoot? 190 of them. Yeah, which is pretty good. Halliburton.
How many of them did he get?
222.
How many?
222.
In the regular season.
Halliburton?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Halliburton more than SGA.
So he was wrong.
But very close.
But very close.
Off by five.
So maybe he was just kind of being hyperbolic. That's more than Halliburton.
Four for your Abe.
If you're listening, bud, I love you. I found out that sometimes he puts the pods in. And he listens to a little Willie and Dibby. He looked at me one day. He goes, I hear you talk about me.
Oh, no. That's.
Well, I'm like, that's what you sound like. At least to me, that's what you sound like.
Yeah.
He does impersonations of me, too. So it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. He shot the second most free throws in the regular season. SGA. Yeah.
Who was more?
Giannis Antetokounmpo. But Giannis at 707, Shea at 669, then a huge jump down to the beard, James Harden, 578. So, like, Giannis, you get it. Like, good luck stopping him. You can't stop him.
Giannis is actually being fouled.
Well, so is Shea sometimes.
No, he's not. Sometimes. Yes, sometimes. Shea, Harden, these dudes are just experts at making it look like they got fouled. Shea gets fouled when he's falling away from 18 feet. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. I really hope that there's a way to have this conversation without it making it sound like I think the guy's not good at basketball. He's obviously a great player, but my filter is my filter. I do not find him enjoyable to watch. That's all.
Can I add something else here?
Yeah.
Yearly salaries. So SGA, on average, with his new contract, over $71 million per year on average.
Yep.
I almost said Oakland. The A's, $77
million. Oh, my God.
The Chicago White Sox, $76
million. That's embarrassing.
The Miami Marlins, $67 million.
So Shea's SGA making more than the Marlins.
By himself, over $71
million. There you go. There you go. That has shades of that WNBA stat that we came up with, Grandy, when we were doing the Caitlin Clark show. I said it to you, didn't I? The whole, like, if you took the salary cap for all the teams in the WNBA, so every dollar that a WNBA team spends this year, all of the dollars, then triple them, and you still haven't gotten to Steph Curry's contract.
Yep.
That one bothered my daughter when I told her that one.
Yeah, just let her know that the new CBA is coming, and so those salaries are going to go up, but...
Not enough.
Right, not enough,
and,
but...
And actually, I don't want to wax poetic on what the finances of the WNBA, but if you go to a Valkyries game, and she has, it's hard to process what's being said to you. I get that the tickets do not cost as much, but the building is absolutely on its ear. It's absolutely on its ear. And when you're like, yeah, this is what those players make, you know what I mean? She's like, you got to be kidding me. That's what they make? Like, yeah, that's what they make.
Yeah. I mean, Tiffany Hayes, $200K. Stephanie Talbot, $125K. Kayla Thornton, $112K. Like these, that's the cap hit. And then you get down to like Kate Martin making $68,595.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Caitlin Chen, welcome back. She's making less than an Oakland teacher. $49,420.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
The WNBA needs to get to a point where your players not only don't have to go play in other leagues, but they'll choose to play here instead of going to Eurobasket.
It will. It will.
And the Valkyries just waived somebody who flew back from the Eurobasket event. She landed. It was Vanderloo. And welcome back to America. You're gone. And so she got waved and found out. You know when you land at an airport and you put your phone back on? And she looks, she's like, oh, I just flew 18 hours from Belgium. I'm gone.
Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can go back.
Awkward.
You are now free to move about the other countries.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to hear something interesting?
I always want to hear something interesting, Grandy.
You guys were running through the biggest moves so far in free agency today.
Yeah.
And one of the big ones is what the Bucks did, waiving Dame and then going out and signing Miles Turner.
Yes.
Mark Spears has reported that the Warriors have been in touch on Damian Lillard now that he is available on the market.
Well, Dan Dibley already told you that's not happening. So take that, Mark Spears. Who you all want to listen to? Mark Spears or Dan Dibley? I'm going to call into the morning show. We're going to do this or that.
Spears adds Lillard will take his time, but there's the possible lure of playing close to where he grew up.
Right. Of course. There's the possible lure, and it would be a lure, but because you could be lured to come home,
both.
And I get that.
It's both. Yeah.
But if you want to just play this out and put aside whether or not he would want to come back and play closer to home, he's probably not going to play basketball until, I would guess, February at the earliest. That would be 9 months post-op.
That's aggressive at his age.
Right.
That's
so
really aggressive.
Let's just say that he misses the entire year.
Yeah. So, like, why are we even interested?
We're really not. So then you're going to take an entire year off and get better and come back in 2026-27. And then you're going to come in and say, you know, I want to make 20 or 25 million. Are the Warriors going to be of a mind to want to pay that for a guy coming off an Achilles?
I mean, the only way I can answer that is I have no idea. I do like what happens next with this CBA and the cap. I know that it will extend a little bit each year. And so more room will get created as we go. For example, well, now Steph's not, he's not setting the bar anymore. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is. So a year from now, you're like, whoa, what a bargain. The Warriors got Steph for 59. Shai's making 73. Do you know? So, I mean, the cap will keep changing. And so does that create more space? Maybe. Obviously, then contracts, as you go another year, you have more information. It's, there's things are tradable and all of that. So I have no idea. I have no idea if next offseason the Warriors will, in theory, have money to spend that they don't have now, because Steph and Butler and Draymond are all still going to be making a big number. But that does not sound like a match made in heaven at all. I don't know about you. My mind is not on the 2026-27 season.
Me either. And I'm just thinking about Dame Lillard, and I guess the idea, the dream would be he wants to come back home and he'll play for peanuts, because he's already getting, what, $26 million a year from Milwaukee to just chill. So I don't know how many of these examples we have to go through, but players don't usually have that mindset of, oh, I'm good on money. You can just pay me the vet min so I can run around Chase Center at 36.
How does that work, by the way? I would love to ask that. Do you know, since you did some Dame Lillard recon, like, he's going to be making his Bucks salary. It is now spread out over 5 years. In his next contract, is whatever he makes subtracted out of the Bucks money because he's still under contract? Or is it money that's added on to what he's making with the Bucks? I openly don't know the answer to that question, but it feels like the double-dipping nature of that idea would not be legal.
I think that,
but then again, he's been waived.
This sounds like a contract question that maybe we'll ask Bobby Marks tomorrow.
Is Bobby on tomorrow?
Not confirmed, but he will have
the answer. For me, just at first blush, it would be, it's not up to Lillard to have to give back money because the Bucks chose to stretch it out. In other words, if he got bought out and they gave him the flat, whatever it was, $112 million, right? They just said, you know what, we're waiving you, here's $112 million, then he wouldn't be subject to any offset going forward because he would be bought out and he would be a free agent and he could go make money with a new team. So I don't think that he or the other acquiring team would have to deal with whatever the buyout was.
But I don't think this was a buyout. I don't think he took a dollar less. They just spread it out.
Well, they waived him, and to waive him, they have to buy him out. Like, they have to pay him what they owe him.
Right.
And pay they're doing me that, what you
they're,
owe me.
They're doing that over 5 years. In other words, there's no buyout negotiation where you take less. Like, Jordan Clarkson took less. He got bought out by the Utah Jazz. He gave back a few million dollars. That amount is exactly what the Knicks are going to pay him. So the contract, in theory, still just kind of lives. Utah is going to pay almost all of it, and you pay it up front, and the Knicks pay the rest. The player makes the exact same amount of money.
But that was just one transaction.
Right. An example. I don't know the answer. But if Dame Lillard, in theory, could go make more, well, then I think Dame Lillard is going to command a real NBA salary. If Dame Lillard, simply whatever he makes is going to be subtracted from the Bucks, then maybe he would play for the minimum, because who cares? You're making the exact same amount either way.
This comes courtesy of Sam Amick in The Athletic. He wrote this morning once the news broke. I'm just going to read this chunk to you. Quote, with Lillard.
Whoa, owed, I made Sam Amick's article? Wait a minute, what'd I do?
With Lillard owed $54.1 million for this season and $58.4 million the next campaign, there is a salary offset for any team that acquires him during that two-year period. And while the Bucks would surely prefer Lillard sign for a significant salary as a way to alleviate some of their financial burden, the reality is he could sign for a minimum salary deal and still be paid the same amount.
Okay. So that's just for the next 2 years.
Correct.
And one of them he will largely not play.
Correct.
So if you wanted
making 54 this year.
Yeah, but if you wanted Dame Lillard for not this coming season, but the next season.
$58.5 million.
Or vet min. Because that's what he's making.
Two more pieces.
That's what Grandy just said.
I think if you did a vet min, and let's say it's $3 million, then the Bucks would only have to pay 55 of the 58.
Right, but like Dame might be willing to do a very tiny deal because he's making the same no matter what.
Two more pieces from Mark Spears reporting on, I think it was NBA Today. I don't have the sound, but I can just relay what he was saying. He did say the Warriors aren't alone in talking to Dame and showing interest.
I'm sure everybody called.
Double-digit teams have already called and reached out. He said that Dame was looking at a two-year deal. If you're the Warriors, and we know that you have that mid-level on top of the minimum contract. He also said Dame was targeting the possibility, and I think you guys have mentioned it, of a return around the All-Star break. If you didn't think Dame was going to be ready to go until the playoffs, would you use a mid-level on Dame next year?
Depends on who else is available. It's intriguing to me as a fallback, but it's also like, let's not act like even a healthy Dame Lillard, like there's an interesting fit question next to Steph Curry. Like you have the exact same player, at least in terms of fit. They're not the exact same player. But what they do, I think you'd have a hard time playing them next to each other is what I'm saying. I think that'd be difficult. You're small, defensively challenged, and have elite 3-point shooters who want the ball a lot. That's not easy.
No.
To play together.
He'll be 35 in 2 weeks, 2 weeks from today. And just looking at the research on Achilles recoveries, it's 9 to 12 months. So 9 months from May would get you at February, 12 months get you to May, and you really won't know until you get into the season. So for me, Lucas, it'd be a no because it's too much of a dice roll to do it now with the mid-level that you desperately need to use on an actual healthy player.
Yeah, unless you really just cannot find anything interesting to you, then, I mean, it's a big name, so it's kind of like it's hard to not be excited by the idea, but I don't think it's a great fit. From the ballpark to wine country, summer's better when your car's ready to roll. Valvoline Instant Oil Change gets you in and out in about 15 minutes. No appointment needed for locations and coupons. Visit BayAreaOilChange.com. 888-957-9570. It's Willard and Dibs.
I want to give you guys an exclamation of my appreciation of listening to Dibs' agitation meditations about Butler's association compensation expectation and Miami's expiration.
Cha-ching!
Now, back to
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
Wow. That was a great moment. And here's another one. A great moment for the Memphis Grizzlies organization. It's always nice to dole out $240 million. And then when the player comes in to sign the contract, they're limping. Awesome. Jaren Jackson Jr. and a Memphis Grizzlies medical update. The Memphis Grizzlies today provided the following medical update on Grizzlies star Jaren Jackson Jr. while participating in a live basketball run off-site. Jackson Jr. sustained a turf toe injury in his right foot, which upon expert evaluation will require surgery. But he'll make a full recovery.
Yeah, a procedure to repair.
Right, that's called surgery.
It could be, yeah. I mean, it could be just like, you hold his foot and then you pop it back out, or I don't know what else you would do. Yeah, he was participating in a live basketball run offsite.
Yep.
Memo to Jaren Jackson Jr. It's July, and this happened in late June. You've said this before, like, stop playing basketball. And if I have a 7-footer who is a really, really good player, and I just broke him off a gigantic bag, I think I would put something in there about him taking some time off, like pick up golf or go fishing, go on a hike, read a book. I don't know. How about you do something other than play basketball in July?
Yep. I mean, sure, they're going to play in the off season. So I have no idea if he's playing too much, but yeah, there's the same first thought that went through my head. Guys, put the ball down. Seriously, like just relax a little bit. Like, go get your workout in. I'm not saying get fat, but, like, listen, I kind of take that the Grizzlies agree with you. Why put the word off-site in there? Why do that?
Because he was playing against Guru at 24-Hour Fitness. I mean, I'm only making light of it because this sounds to me
No, my favorite part about that is Guru's probably listening, and he totally thinks that he can get a bucket on Jaren. There's no question about it.
Were you here? I don't know if you were with the station yet when we had the whole thing about he and Jordan Bell, former Warrior Jordan Bell.
No, I wasn't here yet.
He went on and on about how he could get a bucket on Jordan Bell, former Warrior.
He might be able to get one on Jordan Bell.
But it was a whole thing, and you know, I think we were actually trying to set something up with Jordan Bell to see if Goo could get a bucket on Jordan Bell, and you know, it was just self-confidence from the Goo, which I love.
Sure.
And, it's you great. Know, he's outlasted Jordan Bell, but it's kind of the same thing here where, I mean, I could see Goo at the 24-Hour Fitness like, that guy's really tall. Yeah. That's Jaren Jackson Jr. I'm going to check him.
The world would be my lab.
He's a few years removed from Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA.
Yep.
Yep. I'm gonna bet you're not going to get that bucket.
But again, the way you read it and the way I read it, the same thing. He was involved in a live off-site basketball game. If I'm the GM of a team or the president or the owner of a team, I don't want my basketball players playing in a live off-site basketball game.
Sure don't.
I want you to be playing in a live on-site regular season game. And I know guys want to work out and all the rest of it, but...
I know, Dibs, but $240 million. Like, that would change the way I ran a business. $240 million.
Yeah.
I'd be calling you every day, being like, what are you doing now? What are you doing now? How about now? How about sit down? How about I'll hire somebody to come over there and walk you to the restroom to make sure you don't get hurt? $250 million.
When you were younger, did you ever get together with a group of friends and just play tackle football?
All the time.
Like, we'll meet you at the park and we're just going to play a little 7-on-7 and we're going to play tackle football.
Dude, I told you that former 49er Ricky Ellison used to live around the corner from me and we would go over. This is, you want to know how old we are? Imagine doing this in 2025. We would just run up on his house and knock on the door.
Ricky, want to come play football with us?
Sure. Boom. Straight over to the park, and we're playing tackle football with a Niner linebacker.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, he's just picking us up off the ground and laying us down
right, and
making us laugh. But, yeah, we used to do that all the time.
That's kind of my point about, like, if Brock Purdy were to show up at, like, a middle school in Saratoga and be like, guys, you mind if I mix in? And now he's playing tackle football with a bunch of high school kids? Like, that's probably not going to be something the Niners would want to see.
Nope.
Anyway.
All right. This has been another fun show. And we, again, did not get any of the big Warrior breaking news that people are waiting for. I can't wait to see how the Giants infuriate me tonight. So we got that. And then I got this question. Lucas, this one's for you. Lucas, grab your microphone. Is this our show still? Like, are we running this show, the four of us?
Of course.
We're in charge?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so why does Abel want to talk about the Raiders? Nobody said anything about the Raiders today.
You could ask him.
Abel. Let's go to Abel. He's an EPA. Abel, you think you're in charge of this show or something? What are you doing with this Raiders thing, man?
Ever since the Raiders left, they never got any love.
Yep. Abel, you there? Abel, did we lose you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you, man. What?
Sorry, guys.
What? No, what's up?
Yeah, you know, I'm the guest appearance for the day. But how come you guys never talk about the Raiders? I know they left the Bay Area, but they still got a huge fan base out here.
So
I had to do it some justice.
A, it feels like you answered your own question. B, it's not even NFL season. C, it's not even a month from NFL season. Like, I know that we do talk about some Niners. There's been some big stuff going on. Also, by the way, Abel, I don't know if you've noticed lately, but the Raiders suck.
Oh, hey, man.
No, like, I don't mean that.
I'm a playoff team.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to run that division pretty soon here. Is that it, Abel?
Old man Pete's taking us there, man.
All right.
Don't sleep on him.
Hey, Abel, this is always what I say to Raider fans when they, you know, we start to spar with each other. Hey, have you been out to the digs, man? Have you been out there to Vegas to see them?
I have. It's pretty nice. You should go out there. Have you?
No, I have. That's why I'm asking. That stadium is fantastic.
I appreciate that. See, so you do got some love for the Raiders in your heart.
Well, the Niners were there that day, but yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happened?
The Raiders lost. That's what happened. What do you mean what happened? You know what happened. This was New Year's Day 2 years ago.
Okay, I got a question for you.
Brock Purdy Raiders came from behind.
Yes or no?
No.
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 No?
No.
Oh, man.
No, but here's what I... Here, I'll make you feel good, Abel. And thank you, Abel. We appreciate you, even though the Raiders... Come on, man. But anyway, I did say this. We were already kind of handicapping the AFC. This came up on the Sunday show, and we were all talking... It was because we were talking about the Steelers and Aaron Rodgers, and I'm like, I don't even see how this team's making the playoffs this year. I know Tomlin always finds a way, but I don't see it. And the guy who's doing the show with Ephraim was out. Martin goes, how many playoff teams do you see in the AFC? And you go through the obvious ones where I'm like, okay, let's say the Ravens win the division. I bet the Bengals are a playoff team. The South is a one playoff team division. Then let's say the Chiefs win the West. I think the Chargers and Broncos are both good candidates for a wild card. And then let's say the Bills win the East, and maybe the Dolphins are a good candidate for a wild card. And then I said to him, I go, then there are always surprise teams. And there could be surprise teams in the AFC this year, like the Raiders. I could see them being viable. So that's what I give the Raiders this year.
A chance to be the ninth or tenth best.
Yeah.
Because you get, I mean, 7 of the 16 go, so it's not like you have to be awesome anymore. You just have to be in the top half plus to be a playoff team.
I put them above the Jets. I put them above the Patriots. I put them above the Browns. I put them above the Titans. I put them above the Colts.
Okay.
I put them above, who am I? Oh, the Jags.
Okay, so you got them at 10th right now.
Yeah, and then, you know, if you play well, who knows?
Yep. Problem is, you got 2 Chargers, 2 Broncos, and 2 Chiefs.
You sure do.
And I think they're, I don't know who their crossover is, but probably the same. I think they line up with the NFC West, so I can't be positive about that. But for me, the Raiders are still probably a year away.
They're non-con this year. They will be at Washington.
That's a loss.
They host Chicago. They host Dallas.
Okay.
They are at Philadelphia.
Yeah.
They host the New York Giants. So it's the NFC East.
Right. Not good. Not good, Jim.
NFC East. And a Bears thrown in.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
There you have it.
Okay.
Well, hey, there's your Raider talk for the month.
There it is, Abel. All right, Grandy, what are you doing?
We're going to hear you guys along with Stani and Goo on the crossover coming up next.
Perfect.
Yeah, reacting to, at that point, less than 24 hours of nothing from the Warriors.
Yeah.
At this point, more than 24 hours.
Don't ever miss the crossover, but if you do, Grandy usually has your back. That's what's coming up on the game. It's brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. You want to do it again tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay, Warriors about to make a big move.
Stop.
Okay. All right. For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.